If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Property management's a little bit different. A third-party property manager, obviously, they want to take care of your assets. They want to keep your business. But nobody's going to be more incentivized than you taking care of, you know, our $70 million worth of assets and maybe $30, $40 million we are currently managing ourselves. So really, it was just, you know, providing that additional best service for both us as owners as well as our investors.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Hey, I've got two guests for you today. It's a two-for-one deal. We've got Chris and Colin coming on here today. I'm going to give you both of their bios and then welcome into the show. I think this is one that you don't want to miss. Chris is an attorney, mediator, and real estate investor and coach in Omaha, Nebraska. He is happily married with two children under two. He played both college football and arena football and served in the United States Army. He is passionate about helping others and investing in multifamily real estate throughout the Midwest. And Colin is a full-time real estate investor and owner of Bricktown Management, a property management company located also in Omaha, Nebraska. He, too, is married with two young children and another on the way. He is also the creator of the largest real estate meetup in Nebraska. His passion is working with fellow investors and value-add multifamily real estate. Chris and Colin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thanks, Sam.
Absolutely. Great to have you guys on. I don't do a lot of, two interviewees at the same time. So this will be an interesting experience for me. I'm excited to jump in. You guys, I think, have a great story and are doing awesome things. I know you guys have some unique things that set you apart. But before we get into that, can you give us just a brief overview of kind of where you guys started, where you are now, and how you got there?
Yeah, so I can start this. 2017, read the Purple Book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, was working a desk job, realized pretty quickly that needed to find some passive sources of income and different ways to build wealth. So started, as lots of us, getting into multifamily, bought a threeplex. During that process, continued purchasing more and more assets, you know, smaller multifamilies, created a property management company, and then partnered with Chris. We were actually competing over and over and over. We are located in Omaha. We kept finding that we'd go to the same properties. We're looking at the same thing. So we thought it'd be a good idea for us to partner. And we formed Park Ave Capital, and that's kind of where the story began.
When did you guys decide? So, no, you said you started buying a threeplex. When did you decide to go into bigger assets?
Probably 2017. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the main reasons I like to partner with Colin, is that he's not afraid to just lean into it and get, you know, make things happen. He said he read the Purple Bible in 2017, and that's when he started investing. I read the Purple Bible in 2008. I was in law school. I was in night class for master's degree. I was in the Army. So I didn't feel at the time that I had the time to actually do what they talked about in the book. And so it took me another 4 or 5 years, I guess, because I started in 2013. And so I did single family stuff from 2013, 2017. I slowly, quickly realized that that's not the way to go. And so that's when I teamed up with Colin in 2017. And we've been just getting larger and larger in our purchases since.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, obviously, you know, taking out your competition while at the same time growing your partnership is a cool way to scale. You know, most people don't have the privilege of doing that. What are some things you guys learned in that process, either good or bad, that you said, hey, this was obviously the right way to do it or the wrong way to do it?
For me, both of us actually, and I'll let Colin speak to his previous partnerships, but we partner on other real estate deals with other people many times. The large majority of our deals are now together, and they will continue to be like that. But it just kind of depends on people's end goals and their level. I mean, there's wrong with the people that I partnered with at the beginning of my career, if you will, 16, 17, but they were okay with the duplex. You know, they were okay with perhaps not a 12 unit or certainly not a 203 unit. And they maybe wanted to do a lot of the work themselves. They didn't want to grow a business. They just kind of they liked the idea of investments. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. A lot of people enjoy that. It's just so happened that Colin and I teamed up well. And the reason it works so well is that we always want to push to build the business as opposed to work in the business. We're working on the business. We even added somebody recently who Colin's been partnering with for 3 years now. And I have been for two, named Steven Sykes. He's actually part of Park Ave Capital now too. So I think that what we learned along the way was just make sure you kind of have your goals and your the end in mind that, and make sure they kind of match up.
That's great. That's great. And Colin, you got anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. And I mean, I think just, you know, the transition from smaller assets to larger assets, you know, you hear this all the time, you get certain scales of economy, but some of the major things are you get better debt, you're going to get better financing on the projects, and you're going to be able to take care of or a lot more tax advantages. You're going to be able to, you know, do cost segregation studies. So once we started getting into larger assets, it became more beneficial, and it now becomes more beneficial for, you know, whether it's family members, whether it's friends, whether other passive investors, they're now able to take advantage of that as well.
Right, right. That's awesome. Where are you guys today? What is Park Avenue? Is it Park Avenue Capital? Is that right?
Yeah, Park Ave Capital.
What does Park Ave Capital look like today?
About 70 million in assets under management, just over 1,000 units. We're spread out amongst the Midwest, Omaha, Kansas City, Tulsa, Sioux Falls. Now we're into Des Moines. I think we have an LOI signed yesterday in Phoenix, but for the most part, we're in the Midwest and just looking to grow that multifamily portfolio. Obviously, we're taking on more and more investors throughout the country as we get bigger and bigger. We're on podcasts like yours. And not only that, but we also have some additional businesses as well. I can let Colin speak to that.
Yeah. So actually we're starting a brokerage in about a week from now. So by the time this comes out, we'll have a brokerage, which we're going to focus primarily on Midwest assets, where we're going to be, you know, primarily in Omaha to begin with, however, expanding out to Sioux Falls, Tulsa, Iowa, other areas. We also have a hard money lending company. So we lend to local investors. Right now we're in a few states, but we'll be in about 10 states by the end of the month or so. Have the property management business, which is just designed for our assets. Now we do use third-party property managers out of state, but the internal Bricktown management takes care of most of our assets in Omaha. So yeah, kind of a little gambit, different opportunities.
Right, right. And would you guys define what you do? Would you say it's a vertically integrated company at this point?
I would say we're certainly getting there. I would say every year we're starting to add additional businesses.
Right, right. That's really cool. I'd love to touch briefly on the brokerage firm. What was the thinking behind that? Like, what void in the industry are you guys trying to fill?
So our partner, Steven Sykes, who's part of Park Ave Capital, he's a broker himself. And he had his own brokerage where he was the sole agent for a while. And, you know, we've been utilizing him for a few years now. Both he and we saw that there seemed to be a lack of, and this isn't a shot at anybody, but a lack of investment-minded agents, at least in the areas we were going to. When I say lack, that doesn't mean there aren't any. I'm just saying there's an opportunity here to have agents who are strictly focused on the investment opportunity, perhaps as opposed to passing off some steroid OM to LinkedIn. They really know how to break down. They really know what they're looking at. And on top of that, they want to invest themselves. That's something important to us. One of the things I has always blown my mind is how these agents can make six-digit commissions, usually from many of them don't do that much. There are the ones that we work with do a lot for us, and that's why we work with them. But they don't even roll into the deal. Like they don't understand the concept of how important it is to have passive income. And so that's something we're trying to grow in our business is to link up with those type of individuals who really buy into the entire process.
Right. And that's fascinating that you say that because my experience outside of the commercial realm is that, yeah, very few agents understand the investor or what the investor's needs even are. So they don't know how to present a deal properly, let alone, right, like you said, you know, roll their commission into the deal so that they can be an equity partner in it. Yeah, that's very cool. So when it comes to the property management company, talk to us about building that out. What did that process look like? How do you value or how do you judge, I guess, your property management company versus outside property management that you have out of state? Like, is that hard for you guys to kind of have both hands in both pots or how does that work?
Well, I guess to answer the last question, no, I don't think it is difficult. I mean, it was very helpful in creating the property management company because you you can start from the bottom and you can see kind of all the pieces that get put together so that when you're doing your due diligence on a third party property management company, you can see the things that were effective for you that you would hope to see in them. You can also get some good ideas from those individuals because some of these companies have been around a lot longer, 15, 20 years. So it actually can be mutually beneficial to learn from them. It has allowed us to be better asset managers of those third party property managers. But as far as building it, it was more of a need. You know, I think it's property management's not for everybody. It's very difficult. You know, it's quite thankless often, but it is one of the most important aspects in protecting your investment. You know, the reason that I pulled my money out of my 401k, out of the stock market and everything is because I was putting money over there and had no idea what was being done. And the individuals that were controlling it weren't really incentivized to provide me the best returns. Property management's a little bit different. A third-party property manager, obviously, they want to take care of your assets. They want to keep your business. But nobody's going to be more incentivized than you taking care of, you know, our $70 million worth of assets and maybe $30, $40 million we are currently managing ourselves. So really, it was just, you know, providing that additional best service for both us as owners, as well as our investors.
Right, right. How many people does it take to run a $70 million portfolio on the property management side?
Well, currently Bricktown Management is managing 450 of those units. So I would say that's about half, a little less than half. So we have, I believe, 7 employees or so. That's including maintenance, office managers, project managers, leasing coordinators. And then, gosh, we could use 20, 30 subs at any point, depending on how many projects we're going, because most of our projects are value add. So we're touching almost every single unit in our portfolio or have, and are, you know, doing light to medium to heavy remodels.
But we also utilize as Colin said earlier, we use out of state property management companies as well. And so, you know, they obviously have some type of integration within their system where they have just a number of employees and third-party subcontractor relationships. So, I mean, it takes a lot of people, but Colin said it perfectly, is that the fact that we know exactly what to expect out of a property management company because we're doing it ourselves on our own assets, it makes the relationship even easier when it comes to these out-of-state property management companies.
That's interesting. Now, when you guys decided to build yours, did you already have a property manager in place at your existing assets?
Well, that was me. My first property I purchased, which was with Steven Sykes, the other partner of ours, was a threeplex. And he was doing some property management and suggested that I start doing it. So basically from 0 to 100 units, it was me. And then realized that you needed to move on and make it an actual business. So that was kind of the tipping point.
Right, right. I think a lot of people run into the struggle that a lot of people run into is just getting the roles defined, and not only getting those roles defined, but then making sure they have enough work or that they are not just frenetically, you know, building the systems within that business, I would imagine was kind of a challenge. Can you talk to us a little bit about that side of it?
Yeah. So, and it's something that we're still building, you know, we're creating documentation and manuals every day. That's been one of our big pushes. But it's really finding, I mean, at the end of, or at the beginning or the end of any good business is great people. So you find great people and you gravitate towards their strengths. So we started defining roles basically around individual strengths. You know, I found individuals that were willing to work hard, that were interested. So something we didn't touch on is that Chris and I as employees, they're now investing into real estate as well. I mean, similar with the brokerage and what we're trying to do there. Very, very similar property management, Park Ave side. We want our employees to invest as well. We think that's one of the biggest benefits of working for us. But yeah, building those systems, it's just been kind of an ongoing process. Every time all my employees, the biggest thing that we say is I want you to find where your time is being used least valuably. And then we want to hire that position out. So at the beginning, we're all picking up trash. We're all changing locks. We're all, you know, doing these kind of minor tasks. Okay, now we've gotten to a certain level where our tasks we value at maybe $100 an hour, so we can find a $15 an hour person to take care of those tasks. So that's kind of how we've kept building it. And in that process, we are defining those roles and building out manuals.
Right, right. No, that's really smart. That's an interesting way for people to define, you know, put a dollar figure on what your hour is worth, and then find someone else that maybe can specialize in whatever it is your least valuable skill set is. That's really cool. What talk to us a little bit about your guys' maybe not, I know you mentioned the markets you're investing in, but more, I guess, as a broad scope or broad picture. You know, tell us what you guys see are happening in your markets as far as cap rate compression, where you guys, you know, how you guys weathered through 2020, because I know there was a lot of uncertainty, obviously, last year and probably still. So just talk to us a little bit about how you guys feel about multifamily and where it's heading.
I mean, we chose to lean into 2020, and I'm super glad we did. I mean, there was so much fodder and so much talk at the beginning of the year that you need to back down. We felt comfortable with the experience we had built up until then, and we just worked harder. And 2020 was our best year as a company. We're certainly on pace to better 2020 halfway through this year alone. So we continue to grow. I think it's just knowing, you know, we lucked out, right? We didn't start in 2020 and we didn't start in late 2019. So we lucked out there and we already had some good connections and we knew what to look for. Yeah, there's some rent scares for people and you got to work with the tenants a little more on some help from the community, or whether it's these different businesses that are helping with the lack of ability to pay rent, or there are some new hoops that we're all having to jump through, but there's the light at the end of the tunnel. It's going to get better. And I think that the fact that we leaned into it, it continues to help our business grow. And now we have investors who are either into it for the quick turn, they want their money back in a few years, they'll continue to stay on for forever holding it. Or we have some people who like just park their money now and just wait 10 to 15 to 20 years before they even touch it again. And the ability to now have a plethora of backgrounds as far as investors are concerned has helped us a lot to kind of pick and choose where those investors actually place themselves. So that gamut, that spray allows us to continue to grow.
Yeah. And just one thing to add to that. I think one of the biggest things that we did at the beginning of, you know, last year's March or everything when COVID started hitting, we really asked what we can do for our customer. And I think that's, you see that through a lot of businesses. There's a lot of businesses that said, oh, poor me, what are we going to do? How are we going to survive this? You know, do we have to start letting staff go? Do we have to cut costs here? And as Chris said, we leaned into it. And by leaning into it, we really did focus on our customers, whether that's our residents, whether that's our investors. What are we going to do to provide them better experiences, better returns? And I think that certainly helped us.
Right, right. No, that's a great focus shift, because you're absolutely right. How many people wonder how are we going to survive? And you guys have turned that on its head and say, how do we serve our tenants? How do we take care of them? That's super cool. I want to ask one question to you, Chris. So you talked about the different type of investors that you guys have, which is, you know, some people want to hold for 15, 20 years and some people want their cash back. And you said that, and I think you indicated that your different deal flows allow you to kind of serve each of those different type of investor profiles. How are you presenting different deals to them to meet those various profiles?
Right. I mean, so we've had the ability to take on many off-market deals, but even sometimes deals that are on market that we just look at differently than other investors because of the kind of the traction and the experience that we've built. So for example, pretty soon here, we're going to have a deal that we're going to close on. It was built in the early 2000s. It's for the area, very high class B, probably low class A for the area for sure. And we were able to close on it with HUD financing. Mm. Well, no one even would have thought to ask that. Not a lot of sellers say, yeah, I'd like to sell my property to you in 9 months. I'm willing to wait 9 months. We were able to negotiate that to get them the price they wanted, but on our financial terms. And the reason that's beneficial is that when you're getting 2.2 or 2.3% interest amortized over 35 years, the returns are much better than they would have been if it was Bridge or Local or even Fannie Freddie. Fannie and Freddie right now is a mess. So it makes a lot of sense then. So then we bring that to our investors and say, look, usually our goal is to refinance the property after we force appreciate it. We get your money back in 3 to 5 years. And then you stay on as investors and you continue to earn cash flow. And if you want to recycle that money with us, you can, or if you want to go buy a car, you want to do whatever you want, go ahead. We still have many of those investors, but now with the opportunity for someone to say, look, I can buy into this HUD deal or a deal that has much better financing that isn't a value add, but will continue to appreciate just with the market. They may be okay with a 6% the first year, then a 9% the second year, then a 12% the next year. And we're able to do that because we're finding some of these deals off market, getting a good deal on them and satisfying different investors' needs. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but
I think so. What you were indicating on this HUD deal is it's a 35-year loan term. And so you're going to have somebody come on board and you're going to say, hey, look, you're not necessarily going to get cash out refied on this deal, but you are going to collect cash flow for a very long period of time. That's very different than somebody that goes into a value add and says, okay, you know, like you said, using bridge loan or something else, you're going to get, you're going to refi in 3 to 5 years, you'll get your money back and maybe put it somewhere else. You can satisfy the long-term investor. I guess that's what you're saying.
Right. And with the HUD deal, you can actually refinance or sell after 10 years. It's just, there's a 10-year prepayment penalty. But the reason it's so attractive is that if you start year one and it's 6%, year two is 9%, year three is 12%, and it continues to jump up 3% every single year, even though the money is parked by the investor for a minimum of 10 years, and they, if they average 19% cash on cash, there are certainly a number of investors that have that kind of appetite. It's almost like putting it away in the stock market and just hoping it's worth more later. It's just that it's not as volatile as the stock market.
Right. No, that's absolutely fantastic. Let's jump into the final four here. If you guys were to give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Go ahead, Colin. I've been talking a lot.
Don't underestimate partnerships and education. So I know that's two things, but so many people shy away from the partnerships. Oh, I don't want a partner. I want it all. I don't like people. I heard partnerships go bad. My uncle said him and his partner friend bought a house together and they hated each other. Yeah, partnerships are absolutely key if you really, really want to grow in this business.
Hands down, that's my answer too. I'm not trying to recycle it, but there's no question. I think the kind of caveat with that is that everyone has something to offer. Just find out what your value add is. You may come to a deal like this and you may not have any money and you may have never purchased an apartment before in your life, but you were able to go walk up to the door of the owner of that apartment and convince that apartment owner to sell you something off market. If you bring that deal to an investor like us or anybody, you now have something to offer. You didn't have any money. You've never purchased an apartment before, but all of a sudden you have a deal that's 60% less than market value. You now have something to offer, and that's what you can get in. There's always a way to get into these things. You just got to figure out a way to add value.
Right. I love those answers. That's great. When it comes to investing in yourself, what's one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Gosh, I think lots of education. I mean, getting on podcasts, listening to podcasts, reading, signing up for masterminds.
Maybe I should stop going second so I stop regurgitating everything you're saying. I think that you just got to surround yourself with the right people, right? Whether they're meetups, it's been tough during COVID. I get it. Colin started a meetup about 2,000 members now, and he carried it on through Zoom, and it's still doing a really good job over Zoom. But just surround yourself with the right people. I mean, I learned something every day from people who just started a month ago to people who've been doing it for 20 years. And the more you can talk about it, the more you can kind of bounce ideas off people, the more you can learn. And I think that's really important. Just surround yourself with the right people.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
I'll go first here. Thanks, Colin. One of the ways that we've actually started investing in some of our deals now is we teamed up with a group named Z&E Capital, and we're buying properties that have the availability to not only drastically improve your returns, but also drastically positively affect the environment by... We're adding solar to our apartment complexes teamed with water conservation practices. So we're going in there and we are actually implementing solar on the entire apartment complex. Yes, it's a pretty penny, but it pays off down the long run, and it's beneficial tax-wise and income-wise, and it sincerely helps the planet. We also go in and we actually replace every single toilet, every single faucet, and we're doing all this like in the first 6 months of owning the apartment. So sure, it is certainly helping us financially. It's helping our investors financially, but it is sincerely helpful and is the way progressively that some of these movements are taking, because it is really helping the earth.
That's awesome. Colin, you got anything to add to that?
Well, Chris just found the cure for global warming, so I don't know if I can beat that.
That's awesome.
You know, we Chris and I take a lot of time. We try to mentor younger investors. You know, there's been a lot of people that have mentored us and helped us. So that would be, as I said, not the same as saving the world from carbon emission pollution, but pretty close, a close second.
A close second. Gentlemen, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Chris at parkavinvesting.com. I'm on LinkedIn, Chris Pomerleau. Colin at Bricktown Management. We're both on LinkedIn. You can find us on our website, parkavinvesting.com. Always interested in talking with people, always interested in helping.
Awesome. Guys, thanks so much for coming on today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor,
And subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.